We've had this gentleman on before, and he was one of our favorite guests. In fact, I particularly liked his comments, and so we asked him to come back on. He's been kind enough to do so. We have with us today Dr. Martin Ragalla. He is Senior Vice President for Economic and Tax Policy and Chief Economist for the United States Chamber of Commerce. As I said, you know, we're constantly hearing about small businesses doing this, the private sector doing this, and I don't know anybody that would better represent business in America, the United States Chamber of Commerce. I don't know if you know this, but it's the world's largest business federation, tough morning, representing the interests of more than 3 million businesses of all sizes, sectors, and regions, as well as state and local chambers and industry associations. Dr. Ragalla, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thank you, and thank you for being on again with us. I guess I need to start right out because you wrote a really great article on the coming fiscal cliff, and I keep wondering if this is much ado about nothing. In other words, I don't mean the fiscal cliff. I'd like you to comment on what would happen if it happens, but I just don't see it happening because there's so much attention being placed on it, I think for at least one item in politics, the light is being shown on both parties. I don't think anybody can escape blame if we go over this cliff. What do you think about this fiscal cliff? Is it going to happen? And if it does, what does it mean to us?
Well, you know, certainly if it happens, it means that we're back in recession. The fiscal cliff would impose about $400 billion worth of additional tax increases, and not counting the health care taxes that would come in at the same time. If you added them in, it's about $440 billion. And then you've got a sequestration of spending that would occur that would reduce spending across the board on the discretionary side by about another $100 billion. So when you add them all together, you're looking at somewhere between $550 and $600 billion. That's 4% or so to 5% of GDP. And we're only growing at about 2% a year. So if you're growing at 2% a year and you subtract 4 to 5% of GDP, the math isn't hard to do. You're back in a recession. Now, whether it will happen or not, you're absolutely right. We're shining as much light on it as we can. Other groups are as well. Both parties feel a bit vulnerable, but yet you hear Mr. Dean from the Democrats and Patty Murray from the Democrats say, hey, you know, if the Republicans don't bring a balanced plan to the table, we'll go over the cliff. Maybe it would be better if we went over the cliff. I mean, these are the kind of comments on the one side. I don't think that's good public policy. I don't think that's the right thing to do. And I would hope that cooler heads would prevail when we actually come down to debating it. But both sides seem content to push this into a lame duck session, and it's hard to gauge how a lame duck session would handle this. I mean, you've got people voting on this that know they're not going to be there to be responsible, and you've got other people that know they will. And how that type of a dynamic works out, really, really hard to forecast.
But now, don't we need... on the other side of this, and just I guess a piece of the fiscal cliff, of this whole situation, you're constantly hearing that we need more taxes, and obviously we got a tremendous amount of debt. And I look at it very simplistically. If I was under a great mountain of debt personally, I simply need more income to help pay it down. We need more income. They obviously want to go after the higher earners in our society, the top 1%. Can they kind of parse this out and take care of part of it and leave part of it in there?
Well, you know, they've got two problems. They've got the short-run problem of what to do with this fiscal cliff, and then they got the longer-run problem that we have run our deficits so incredibly high and added so much to the level of debt that our debt-to-GDP ratio, if you took all debt, currently over 100%. If you looked at just the outside debt, the debt held by people outside the federal government, you're looking at 70 to 75% debt-to-GDP ratio. So we have to get that down. One side says, let's cut spending. The other side says, let's increase taxes. Increasing taxes has a negative impact on growth, and growth is a prerequisite to get this whole thing under control. So what we want to do is, you know, in the short run, not do anything that's going to cause us to go into recession, not do anything that's going to significantly retard our economic growth. And then at the same time, to do things over the longer term, to put things in train over the longer term so that people around the world and in the United States really believe that Congress is going to get its hands around government spending, large deficits, and this increasing debt level. And that's a difficult task, but we've got to do both, and we got to do them well, and we don't have a whole lot of time right now to push this off.
You're right. As you can tell, folks, we have a great show for you this morning. We've got Dr. Mark Ragaia, Senior Vice President for Economic and Tax Policy and Chief Economist of the United States Chamber of Commerce. If you'll stay with us, we've had a couple more questions, Dr. Ragaia. Stay with us. We'll be back to you in just a few moments. Dr. Ragaia, how can they follow you? Things that you publish. Is there a way that they can follow some of the work that you put out?
Well, the U.S. Chamber's website is the easiest way, and they have a number of the stuff that I've written is in our Econ 101 column on in our Free Enterprise magazine, and that's all available on our website, and you can get on and very easy navigate the site to find that kind of stuff. So
Econ 101, that's a really good way to put it, and I appreciate that. Listen, in your article, the second part of your article I wanted to ask you about was you just mentioned just briefly a downturn in Europe. What are your thoughts about Europe, and how is it affecting business here in the United States?
Well, there's two big issues. One is our own fiscal problem here, and the other issue is the fiscal problems in Europe. Europe has maintained a very aggressive type of redistributive fiscal policy over the years. They have a very aggressive program for federal funding of jobs. There's a very tight relationship between jobs in Europe and the individual countries. Many more jobs over there are related to their particular governments. And so what happens is that there's an almost incestuous relationship in Europe between many of the banks in the lower tier in Greece and Spain and Italy and the issuance of debt by their governments. The problem is that many of those governments have run debt levels, debt to their GDP, that are enormous, that are well in excess of 100. Greece is like 160%, and Spain and Italy are, well in excess of 100%, more like 120 to 140%. And what happens is that the investors that buy the debt then become concerned that it might not be any good. And so they start charging higher interest rates. Of course, the higher interest rates these countries have to pay, the higher their interest costs, the higher their deficits, the higher their debt levels, and it becomes a vicious cycle. The banks, their banks, have been incorporated into this, and therefore they are the main holders of this sovereign debt that's in question. Now, the issue is the EU, the 17-country union, going to stand behind the debt of individual countries? Are they going to put in mechanisms to control the individual country's ability to issue debt? Are they going to find out somehow how to recapitalize and to break the link between the sovereign debt and the banks in those countries? Now, over the last few years, I think our banks have pulled away from direct lending to many of these most problematic countries, Greece, Spain, Italy. But they're still indebted to and major lenders to the EU as a whole. So if a country like Greece were to leave the EU, that would be problematic. That would be an issue, but it probably wouldn't be a cataclysmic event. But if the whole EU were to come apart, then it most certainly would. And in addition, when the European Union suffers, when they are currently in a recession, when they don't generate a whole lot of income, we don't sell a whole lot of goods to Western Europe. We are our major trading partner, the major trading partner for the U.S., the biggest one, is the Western European group of countries as a whole. And so when they're not doing well, they can't buy as much from us. So they get they go into a recession, they don't generate enough income, they don't buy a lot of our goods. So if you look at the situation, we have some direct contact because we've lent to them. That's pretty much under control, I believe. But we have this bigger issue of how much we sell to them and how much our growth rate depends on our ability to sell to them. And that would be greatly reduced if this situation in Europe were to end itself by in some sort of cataclysmic event. Now, the European Union, every time we get to the edge of the cliff, seems to be able to pull together enough funding, enough liquidity, enough capital injections to pull them back from the cliff, but not to in any way fix the situation. So they're not doing the long-term stuff that we all know they're going to have to do to get this under control, but they do enough in the short run to just kind of pull us back. And that's why you see these large gyrations in the stock market, that the little drop like a stone for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, and then we'll get an announcement from Europe and we'll have 3 or 4 days of rallying, and then the worry starts again. So it's kind of a manic depressive existence. And it does not look to me like the European group of countries is going to get together and really try to address this in a long-term fundamental sense.
So they're going to keep kicking the can down the road like we do. What is the end result here? Do you think that we're going to have I think Europe's in a recession now, at least it seems to be.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Do you think things are just going to simply get worse and until Greece leaves the euro and you know, we do have an event? Is there an event sitting out there on the horizon that you think is going to take place?
Well, you know, that's the $64 million question. Is there an event out there? And if so, what is the event? And there's probably a dozen different events that could trigger this. But right now, it looks like they are committed to trying keeping this thing together. They're not quite yet at the point of coming out with the big policy statement, but it seems like they're committed to keeping it together. Here in the U.S., there are a number of triggers that would likely be more important for us. First, of course, is the end-of-the-year fiscal cliff. Very quickly after the fiscal cliff is something we haven't talked about, and that is the debt ceiling. We're going to bump up against the newly increased debt ceiling sometime between, say, January and April. And at that point, Congress is going to have to come together and vote to increase the debt ceiling. They don't have any choice. They've already essentially extended the credit. They've already borrowed the money. They've already spent what's out there. We can't say, okay, well, now let's get religion and turn the clock back and we'll pretend like we didn't spend. They're going to have to finance what they have spent and the commitments they've made, and that means they're going to have to raise the debt ceiling. But when they do that, it creates, you know, again, another trigger point that the markets focus on. So, you know, we have some very, very near-term issues that and triggers that could signify a return for the U.S. economy into recession. If you get away from that, and I don't want to be the bearer of bad news all the time, if you get away from the European problems and you get away from this fiscal cliff and debt ceiling issue, two big issues, but if you look beyond that, the U.S. economy is doing okay, not good. We're growing 2%, 1.5 to 2%. We're not generating enough jobs. The jobs report that came out on Friday really was abysmal. I mean, everybody got very euphoric over 163,000 jobs. We need to create twice that per month to really make a dent in the unemployment situation that crept up during the last downturn. And when you create 150,000 jobs per month on average, which is what we've done now for the last 2 years, 150,000, 1.8 million a year, there's 1 million new entrants into the workforce. So you've got about 800,000 jobs that you can apply to the backlog of unemployment that you built up during the downturn. Well, we lost 8.5 million jobs. We've replaced a couple of million of those, maybe three. We've still got somewhere in the neighborhood of 4.5 to 5 million jobs to get back to where we were, not to get going ahead, but just to get back to where we were. Our unemployment rate is 8.3%, and we know that's mismeasured, because it doesn't count the people that have left the workforce. Our participation rate has dropped like a rock. When that happens, the unemployment rate actually comes down. Last month, with 163,000 jobs, the participation rate actually fell 0.1 percentage point, and which normally would have brought the unemployment rate down. But instead, the unemployment rate went back up. Why? Because the household survey lost almost 200,000 jobs, and the household number is what goes into the unemployment rate. So if you look beyond the top-line number, which wasn't good, the rest of it was abysmal. And it's been like that now for, you know, for years. We are sitting here with an economy that is growing since the middle of 2009, when we came out of the recession, is growing at an average of about 2.2%, which is at or a little bit below our long-run potential. You cannot create jobs when you grow at or below your potential.
And you're absolutely right, and I wish people understood that better. I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask, which is a pretty simplistic question, I mean, I don't know of anybody that represents small business better than the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And as we listen to the talking heads and all these news reports about the financial situation and the jobs and things like that, they're always talking about the private sector. And you know, a big thing was made by the Democrats this time that the private sector added new jobs and has continued to add new jobs for 29 straight months or something like that. But when you talk to business owners around the country, what is their feeling? Are they pessimistic about the future? Are they optimistic? Are they neutral? I mean, what's their overall stance?
Well, I would call it neutral to pessimistic. I mean, when you look at the various surveys that are done by us, we do a quarterly survey. They were very concerned about the health care bill being upheld by the Supreme Court and exactly how that was going to increase their costs and what they're going to do to try and address those issues. I mean, will they stay at 49 employees and just hire part-timers after that, because that way they don't get kicked into the group that fully has to bear the cost of this? These are the kind of questions that raise concerns on their part. Small businesses, kind of bear the brunt of the economy. They're more price takers than price setters in the economy. So when the economy's good, they can take advantage of it. When the economy's bad, it's tougher for them to work around it. It's tougher for them to find credit. And so far, credit has not been readily available. We've seen the bank's credit standards tighten. The Fed has done a lot to pump liquidity into the banking system, but the liquidity has not passed through the banking system and actually materialized in loans to smaller business. So credit availability is a problem. Their future, current and future taxes are a problem. And then the administration comes out and says basically, hey, we're going to raise taxes on the rich. They don't really tell everybody, hey, wait a minute, we're also going to raise taxes on the most successful of small businesses. They say, hey, well, you know, our tax cut would handle 95% of small businesses or 97% of small businesses. But the successful small businesses, the one that grow, create jobs, go on to become mid-size and even parts of bigger businesses, they're not escaping this tax increase if it comes down the line and if it were, to be limited to incomes below $200,000 or $250,000. In fact, about over 50% of small business income would be subject to that higher tax rate. And so when you're looking at the impact of these tax increases, small businesses, all of whom want to be successful and all of whom think they're going to be successful, that's why they're willing to take the risk to start a small business, they look at this and say, wait a minute, that's going to hit me directly. And as a result, I'm going to have to be more careful about what I hire, what I put on my shelves, how much inventory I carry. I can't overextend myself in an environment that is this uncertain. And it kills their natural optimism, and that manifests itself in slower growth rates and much slower job creation. We're seeing it. I mean, this isn't theoretical. We've been in a recovery for 3 years. We've had the same administration and roughly the same Congress configuration for 3 years. Changed a little bit 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago with the midterm elections, but it still maintained a Democratic Senate and a Republican House and an administration that is the same throughout the entire period. And the policies that we've had have not been successful. So, I mean, we can debate the theoretic, or you can sit down and look at the numbers. We haven't created enough jobs. The unemployment rate is 8.3% and rising as of the last month. And the policies have not worked to generate the kind of job growth that we need to reemploy the people that were displaced during the last election. The only reason the unemployment has gone down is because so many people have become discouraged and quit looking for work. We don't count them. When they quit looking for work, we don't count them as employed. We don't count them as part of the workforce. They're just essentially ignored. And if you look at the number that doesn't ignore them, the so-called U6 on the unemployment report, that number's 15%. That's the real number of unemployed and underemployed. That's the real, the pain number. That's the 8.3% is the top line number that has all the asterisks and the footnotes explaining it. When you want to know what the pain number is, it's 15%. 15% of the people are either unemployed or underemployed, and that's not a good number.
All right, very quickly, I've only got a minute. What keeps you up at night? What is the one problem, Dr. Ragaya, that you really, really worry about?
That this Congress will become so polarized that they'll get past the election and still won't be able to address these most immediate problems. And these have to be moved. We have to move beyond these. And if we can't, we will go over the cliff. And I really don't think this U.S. economy today needs a Thelma and Louise moment.
Oh, no, they don't. Dr. Martin Ragaya, thank you so much for being with us. You've just been tremendous. I just love it when you're on because you explain things so easily for our folks to understand. I appreciate you taking the time this morning.
My pleasure.
My listeners, thank you so much, sir.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
A few closing comments in just a few moments, folks. Stay with us, and we'll be back to you in just a minute.